And welcome back once again. We're doing the triple deuces this week, episode number 222, Parish of the Patriots. We're still going. Hopefully the show's still interesting. And some of y'all are coming back, so you must be getting something out of it. Whatever's brought you here, whether you're a new listener or you're a return member of the congregation, regular member of the congregation, looking out at all of y'all here in the pews. Now, it's good to have you back. If you are new, we do have a Christian-specific segment. We stick that at the midpoint of the show because there are some people maybe don't want to hear that. So I do. I keep them segregated. But if you skip that, you are missing out on some really good stuff. In my humble opinion, advise you to stick around. I have people that say they ain't even Christians and they like the Christian-specific segment. So that tells you something. I'm not sure what it says, but it does, tell you something. As with every show I'm doing right now, I'm doing the Daily Nationalist on Mondays and Fridays. Dr. Johnson, of course, is doing his Orthodox Nationalist show on Wednesday. And he's also continuing to do the Daily Nationalist show for Thursdays. Obviously, he's doing that solo because Finn isn't here, obviously. But as I've been saying, we've got new content up every weekday. The weekends, you know, that's when we all record, basically. That's when we record our big shows, this show and Dr. Johnson. We generally work on that stuff on the weekend. You know, sorry, weekend content. Y'all off doing things on the weekend anyway. Y'all can download these shows from the week, and while you can have them in your earbuds while you're out there mowing the grass or whatever it is you're doing, out taking a run, whatever. You can download these shows and listen to them. That's one of the great things about streaming. About like Radio Albion, is you don't have to sit there like my show comes on at 3 o'clock. You can download it, listen to it anytime, or you can play it on your computer in the background at work. Just be sure they don't catch you. But yeah, we are going to continue to have new content up Monday through Friday. That's the goal here with whatever we got, you know, got to do. So hope you'll catch all of that. I'm kind of getting up to, and I'm sure it's the same for Dr. Johnson, but myself, I can speak for myself, doing the Daily Nationalist by myself. I'm, it's a learning process. I've been, of course, doing the Friday one with Sven for ages, and, you know, being able to sit there and work off of each other like he and I had done for years. It's a whole nother ball game to sitting around. Cause I don't, y'all know this show though. Y'all are regular members of the, you know, congregation come to this show. Y'all know I don't do news articles on this show, and sitting there reading through a news article and commenting on it is really new territory for me. And I'm getting the hang of it as far as doing it solo. Like I say, doing it with someone like Sven, we've been back and forth with each other for so many years. It's like second nature, you know, like he knows when I stop talking. He knows to pick up because he's just done it so long with me that he knows. So he's done now just by the tone of voice. Having to pick this up and do second nature or doing it solo rather. It's a whole nother ball game and it's a learning curve. The show, what I'm saying, I guess, is the Daily Nationalist Monday and Friday. And I realize it's not exactly daily because Tuesday and Wednesdays, there's not a Daily Nationalist. Sorry, but it's going to get better. You know, I'm going to get better at it. Understand, I'm kind of working this. It's something new. I've never done shows that just consist of me sitting here reading news articles. It's new. Bear with me. It's going to get better. As I'm going to continue on those shows and this show, I'm not going to harp y'all to death, but I'm going to continue on every one of these shows for long. As he's locked up, I'm going to be putting the links in the description to where you can contact Sven, write the man a letter. Send money to them. There's all kinds of easy ways to do that. You know, I'm going to continue to do that. We're not going to forget. I mean, I understand y'all. Y'all understand the amount of work Sven has done. I've made jokes about it, but it's true. The quality here has dropped. We're continuing to put content up. But Sven was just doing this for so long and was so good at it and so talented. In this way, look, people say, you stepping in. I'm not stepping in. I ain't stepping in doing nothing. You know, I'm trying to keep content up, you know, to support my friend who's been unjustly imprisoned. But the amount of work Sven could put in, what I'm doing is just like this band-aid stopgap measure. That's all it is. I told people, they're like, I'm house sitting. That's all I'm doing. Like, my friend has gone out. He's gone out of town for a while, and I'm just doing my best to watch the place while he's gone. I ain't rearranging the furniture. I'm not inviting other guests in. I'm house sitting. That's all I'm done. Anyway, I'm not going to harp that to death. I know y'all don't forget, my friend. I would continue to ride him, and I hope y'all can ride him, drop a note so he knows. Speaking of dropping the note and speaking of paying the tithes, look, if you get something out of this show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. If you go to the bottom of the description page, I got snail mail, got Bitcoin, got Monero, got an email address down there for your notes. And if you have a weirdo cryptocurrency, I'll give you an address for that. You know, it's troubling times. I'm sorry. It's got to be this way. But we got to do what we got to do. So it is much appreciated. With that having been said, we seg right into the listener supporter mailbag. GPD, thank you for all that you're doing for the network. I think what happened to Sven is the perfect example of what they want for all of us. And that's from Mr. T. Well, for sure, they want everybody to be intimidated. And it is intimidating. I mean, let's be real with ourselves. You know, when you read about people, you know, like, for instance, the Ricky Vaughn guy here in the U.S., that they're now trying to sentence to prison for 10 years for obvious joke memes in the 2016 election as nothing more than retaliation for supporting Donald Trump. When you look at that and you read it and you say, man, that is outrageous. It's just crazy that they're doing that. It's just obviously just petty retaliation. The guy wasn't even, I don't think the guy was even really doing any of that anymore. And they still went back, and because he put up these memes in 2016, we're going to get back at him. And you can read that, and it's outrageous. But when it happens to somebody you know, when it happens to a friend, that's a whole nother thing. You know, when it happens to somebody that you know and that you're friends with, it's real personal. You know, it becomes very real to you. But whether it's somebody you know or somebody you simply read about, like with the Ricky Vaughn case, whatever, it does send a message, and it works. I mean, there's no way you can realistically read about these things or hear about these things or know about these things and not be intimidated. You know, I mean, it is. It does intimidate people. It makes them more afraid to say anything. I think that's what makes it all the more important that for those people who are out here saying things, they're taking the darts for everybody who agrees with that and is afraid to say anything. You hear what I'm saying? And I'm specifically saying everybody out there doing that. I don't want to be like, you know, I'm over here tooting my own horn. Everybody out there who is out there continuing to speak the truth in the face of that intimidation, you know, for the people that agree with all of that, that aren't out doing that, and you know, it makes the role very important. But it does, it sends that message, and people are afraid. I think people are more afraid now than ever, because we're living under a more and more oppressive regime. All of this cancel culture nonsense, all of this thing where, you know, they're attacking people for using wrong gender pronouns or whatever gibberish they invent. All of this is intimidation. It is psychologically conditioning people to shut the hell up and go along with whatever they say. Whether it's imprisoning political dissidents or whether it's hounding people out of their jobs because they refuse to use the correct gender pronouns or whatever gibberish they make up. When they come up with these stories where they take a snippet and say, look, this Karen offended a black person and you didn't see any of the video leading up to that. And that person gets hounded by the media and fired from their job and all of that. All of these things are a message. To be afraid, shut the hell up, to keep your head down. Keep your head down. Don't rock the boat. And it works. It works. On the vast majority of people, it works. Because it is intimidating. You know, I'm not going to sit here and like put on a brave front and say, I don't think about these things. You know, it is. It's intimidating. When you got to be speaking the truth. You better have some real fundamental reasons and convictions of why you're doing that. Oh, because I don't, it's very much, no, it is. It's an intentional program. Let's keep rocking on here. I have a card and I can't open it. I'm sitting here fumbling with fumbling with my fingers. Greetings, Grandpa Dan. I've benefited from the Parish of the Patriots, and it's only right that I make a small donation. I've also benefited from MRJ and Sven, and I hope and pray that you guys weather this storm. Cheers, David. Thank you very much. It means a lot. And I hope that folks, this is a short note, and it means a lot to me. And I hope folks are able to drop a short note like this, Sven. You ain't got to write your life history. Just something like this means a lot to me. And I've been telling Sven, been writing Sven every week. If yet to hear back, which is concerning, but I've been writing to him every week, and I've been telling him, you know, there are a lot of people out here praying and pulling for you, brother. You know, I mean, you're not, they make you feel alone. They lock you up, make you feel alone, but you're not. You're not. I do appreciate it. Means a lot. Means a lot to all of us. And finally, Grandpa Dan, hope this finds you well. I'm praying for you and Sven. Please forward, and I'm just putting X amount here. I'm not going to tell people dollar amount. Don't worry, it's not a quajillion dollars or something. Please forward this amount to Sven, yours in Christ, and that's from Debbie, and I will do. Thank you very much. There's very easy ways to do this. I mean, if for whatever reason, if y'all are absolutely uncomfortable, you know, I'll do it. I'll forward it. I don't care. But then we do, like I said, we have the links if you want to send something, Sven. You can go to the prison website. I was looking through the prison website. That link is there. And there's a spot there where you can directly donate to a prisoner's commissary using your debit card. And of course, there's the GoSendGo. And you know, there's even a postal address on the PA article. If you want to put cash in the mail, just put a note in there. Let them know it's for Sven. Patriotic Alternative is managing and taking care of a lot of that stuff. So kudos to them. And anyway, thank you. And yeah, I'll be sure that gets forwarded along. So, yeah, no, very much appreciate it. And I'd just like to take the time to say on behalf of Sven, you know, everybody, I looked at that GoSendGo, and it's very encouraging what people put in there. And I don't know what people put other means. But I just like to say on his behalf for him, because I know he wouldn't mind. You know, thank you very much for everybody who has been supportive, sending letters and kicking in toward the man. Because I can imagine, you know, I've been through some, y'all know, I've been through my own share of troubles, but nothing like that. I've been sent to prison, praise the Lord. And so I can imagine, you know, so, yeah, you know, that's just this world we live in. We live in this crazy, crazy, backwards world. When you look around, the lies are so much in everybody's face that they have to do the censorship and the threats and the punishment, you know? I mean, if somebody's telling you the truth, they ain't got to throw all that other stuff because the truth stands on its own. It's one of the things that really, you know, the truth is amazing in that sense is that it stands on its own. We live in this empire of lies. We live in this. The Western world is just everything now. It's just lies on steroids. I was reading an article this morning, and the U.S. was whining about China again. And you know, recently, Lloyd Austin, they wanted Lloyd Austin to meet with the Chinese. And the Chinese have already said, they said, there ain't no point in talking to you people because you'll say one thing and then come out the next day and turn around and say the exact opposite. They already said they're not fooling with this. And they still come back. They still come back because they want to play their word games. They want to come back and do their word wizardry. Like, we're going to say this opposite thing and you got to go along with it. And they just don't understand when people are done fooling with them. It's like in your personal life. You got somebody in your personal life and that person lies to you every time they open their mouth. At some point in time, you're like, you know what? I ain't even talking to you no more. You know, I'm just done with you. All you do is lie. And they just keep coming back. They wanted Lloyd Austin to meet with their Chinese equivalent of their Secretary of Defense or whatever. And the Chinese blew them off for a while and then finally responded with just like, no. No, but just no long-winded things like, nope, not doing it. There's a lot of power, by the way, in the word no. This is a little sidetrack for those of you in your personal life. You don't have to do things you don't want to. I mean, yeah, no, let me rephrase that because yeah, sometimes you do have to do things you don't want to. That's just life. But a lot of the things that you wind up agreeing to just because you want to be polite, but you don't really want to, you don't have to do those things. Free yourself up of that. And let me tell you, no is a powerful word. And let me tell you the secret to using the word no. When somebody tries to get you to do something you don't feel like doing, and you just look at them and say, when they say, oh, would you mind doing X, Y, or Z? Just look at them and say, no. And stop yourself. And that's the hard part, is stop yourself after no. Don't say, no, I'm busy that weekend. Don't say, no, I've got other things to do. Because that's what they're, and it's amazing what you'll find when you do this is that they stand there waiting for that second part. Because you see, the second part is the invitation to argue with you, to start the negotiation. And you've been through this. I guarantee you've been through this, and y'all know what I'm saying. Somebody say, hey, would you mind going doing X, Y, and Z? And you're like, no, I'm busy this weekend. And they're like, oh, really? What are you doing? Like, it's their business. And you say, well, I'm doing this, that, or the other. Oh, well, when are you going to be done? Well, I'm going to be done at 3 o'clock. Well, that's okay. We can wait and do it at 4. And pretty soon they've got you shoehorned into doing something you didn't want to do. You don't owe nobody no explanation. This is going to free you up in your life. I'm sharing this with you to give you freedom. There are things in your life you got to do. Like you working for a living, sometimes your boss is going to tell you, so you don't want to do that, but you got to do it. But there's a lot of things in life that people get you to do that you don't want. You ain't got to do that. And you don't owe them an explanation. Train yourself to say, nope. Uncomfortable silence. Always use the uncomfortable silence and watch them. They will stand there like waiting for you to say the other part. And they're waiting for that because they want to start the negotiation. If you just say nope, most of the time after the uncomfortable silence kicks in, they realize you're not going to contribute and open the door for them to negotiate. They'll usually just, oh, okay, and leave it alone like that. When I first learned this years ago, when I first learned this life hack years ago, people around me joked about me being rude, you know, like, oh, you know, Dan, he was just like, nope. Yeah. But it works. It works. Now, some people will sit there and after the uncomfortable silence, they'll come back at you and be like, well, why not? And a good typical response is, what do you mean? Why not? Because you don't, and which tells him, I don't owe you an explanation. You asked me and my answer was no. You know, that's it. If they get pushier beyond that, then you can just be rude because now the mask is off. They're just trying to force you to do something for them, to their benefit. Life's full of crap you got to do that you don't want to do, like with work, namely. Sometimes with family, so whatever the case may be. But a lot of crap is just stuff people try to get you manipulated into doing to their benefit. You ain't got to do that shit. Just tell them, nope, not doing it. Move on. Give them the uncomfortable silence. The uncomfortable silence is very powerful. Harness the power of the uncomfortable silence. It's your friend. And you don't owe people no BS explanation. You can just say no because you have freedom. You have free will. God gave that to you. Free will. Anyway, after sharing that life hack, we go back. The Chinese told him, nope. See, y'all thought I was going to lose track. And it was hard. That happens to me sometimes. I'll get off on one of these things. And when I'm done, I have to hit pause on my recording. And I'm sitting there going, what the hell was I talking about? What was I talking about? In really extreme cases, I have to go back and listen to get picked back up. This isn't one of those times. Thank goodness. It makes for a long recording session when I have to do that. The Chinese were like, nope, and then gave them the uncomfortable silence. And then they whined about it. You know, the U.S. whined about how China needs to keep these lines of communication open. Anyway, I was reading this story, and Lloyd Austin, after being told nope by the Chinese, went out and publicly demonstrated why the Chinese aren't talking to them. It's just an amazing thing if you care to observe it. Now, most people don't observe, they don't care about these things, and that's whatever. But for those of us who are interested in these things, it's just amazing to watch Backwards World go out there on the international stage and basically make an ass out of themselves. After the Chinese tell them, we're not messing with you because you just say one thing and then go out and do another. So after the Chinese tell them no, then they whine about it and say, well, we're the U.S. trying to keep these lines of communication open. Lloyd Austin goes, and he's making this speech. And he says, China, we want China to maintain the status quo concerning Taiwan. It's imperative that China maintain the status quo on Taiwan. China ain't never deviated from the status quo on Taiwan. Regardless of what your views on that issue are, is irrelevant. The truth is, China's the one's been demanding the U.S. stick with the status quo on Taiwan. It's the U.S. that's turned over the table on the status quo. And then they sit there, China needs to be sure, maintain the status quo on Taiwan. And then he goes on and talks about how the U.S. is going to build more military installations in China's backyard to make sure we continue to work towards peace. They act like their word wizardry has all of this power. And I do. I think that there's this misunderstanding, because I think the people that have inherited all this, they're running all these things now, aren't very smart. I do. I think you see this incompetence. I mean, they're losing badly in Ukraine. And I've said this before, World War III is happening now. It's asymmetrical compared to what you might envision, but it's happening now. China's waging that war on the economic front. Russia's waging that war by grinding up U.S. and NATO military capability with very little sacrifice on their part. And in all fronts, the U.S. is losing badly. And now the U.S., which is NATO, is kicking over anthills in Serbia. I mean, it's just like, what's the strategy here? You're going to go kick up Serbia now. And obviously, they don't have a strategy. That is really my impression. There is no strategy. They're going to go kick over this. And it's like, well, let's go stir up an anthill over here. And maybe something will happen. You know, it's like, well, let's try this. Let's see what happens there. Maybe something good will happen here. I don't know. Let's try it. What's the worst that could happen? There is no strategy. Well, the worst that could happen is you're running this bluff that, like, Russia will, I don't know, run around and be confused. You're absolutely gambling on Russia not going in and helping Serbia. Because if they do that, then, you know, you wind up, what if you wind up with a direct engagement between Russian military and NATO, quote unquote, peacekeepers, who are doing the opposite of peacekeeping, by the way, which is, once again, word wizardry. Then what? There is no strategy here. But I think a lot of it, these people, they're so hung up on, like, the difference between, like, media influence and actual power. You can sit there and write. It's amazing to me in the Western media. The Daily Mail does it in Britain. Yahoo News is one of the worst offenders I've seen here in the U.S. And they print these ridiculous propaganda articles about the Ukraine war. I mean, they're just, Yahoo is printing stuff literally from Ukraine Pravda Ukraine. You know, I mean, again, we're just talking about the fact, regardless, maybe you think there's something wrong with, you know, you think the Russians were in the wrong or whatever. That's not even what we're talking about. We're just talking about the literal absurdity of printing out these propaganda pieces. They're obviously not true. It's just in your face, not true. And yet they do with a somewhat straight face. And it's like they start believing their own BS. You know, they organize these Twitter accounts to try to make it look like there's all of this, you know, standing with Ukraine going on. I mean, I'm not saying there's nobody standing with the Ukraine, but they try to amplify it. The point is, they confuse real power with this influence. You know, they're destroying the Russians on Twitter. They're making Putin look really bad in the Western media. And they think that somehow translates into winning. Like, you know, we're countering, we shipped all these, the government ships all these weapons to the Ukraine, and then Russia blows all the weapons up. But see, that's countered by, we wrote this fantasy article about how, you know, all the Russian troops are going to run back to Moscow and, you know, commit mutiny against Putin because they're so mad about this or something. You know, like, that balances the two out. I do. These people are so living in a fantasy world that I think that on a certain level, that's what they think. It's the same thing. They think that if we create enough bot accounts on Twitter that are supporting our version of events, then that means that's reality. If we make up enough articles saying, you know, the Russians are running in fear in front of the mighty Ukrainian army, then that makes these things into reality. I do. I think there's certain, they believe their own BS. There's a part, it's an illustration, and I'm going to do anime here, so bear with me, because you'll get it even, there's anime, called Legend of the Galactic Heroes, A New Thesis. I've never watched the original. There's an old one that's the original. People are going to be emailing, you need to watch the original. I've watched the new one. Anyway, just as a highlight of an example of this, so like, why are you bringing up anime? There's a reason. Doesn't make any sense, but there's a reason. Okay. Anyway, there's a scene where the Galactic, it is really good, by the way. But anyway, there's a scene where the Galactic Empire rolls in to the ports there in Fezzan. Again, you really should watch the show. It's a long show and it's not even done yet. It's a long story. But I would just say that it is amazing to me that the ADL hasn't complained that the Fezzan are an anti-Semitic caricature. It's just, anyway. So the Galactic Empire rolls up executing their military plan, and they roll up with a fleet of fully armed cruisers into the main port at Fezzan. You've got this whole armada of ships, all these men, weapons. And the guy running the port is on the comm system pounding the table and warning them, you need to withdraw now or you're going to face punishment in a court of law because this is illegal. There's just something, just, it was hilarious. And that illustrates this misunderstanding of power versus influence. You know, you, if you got one guy on a ship shows up in your port that ain't supposed to be there, yeah, that's a real threat. You know, you could have your authorities come in and drag him into the court. And he could get his ship impounded. But when you got the Galactic fleet sitting there that can level you in the next 38 seconds, I'm going to take you to a court of law, isn't a real threat. You see, that's kind of how it is. You know, we're going to make you look really bad on Twitter. If you don't quit bombing these supplies we send, we're going to just wait till you see the next nasty article we write about you. Is that mindset? We'll take you to a court of law. Oh, okay. And it's very dangerous because these people are, if you're not dealing with reality, then you're not going to make good decisions, whether that's a government doing that, you get a group of people making important decisions that are doing that, or whether it's you in your personal life. If you're not dealing with reality, if you are creating a fantasy world and basing your decisions off of a bunch of gibberish that you're making up in your mind because that feels better, then you're going to make one bad decision, which is going to compound to another bad decision, and they're just going to keep building on top of one another till the whole thing blows up in your face. Until one day the Galactic Empire shows up in your port, and you're talking about, I'm going to take you to court over this. Reality going to slap you in the face at some point in time. Saw another article earlier this week, and President Xi Jinping of China, he was talking to his military guy. I don't remember if it was an address at an academy or a meeting of, you know, the major, all the heads of the different, you know, the People's Liberation Army. Anyway, but basically the gist of what he told him was, y'all need to be getting ready because things are pretty close to going down. I mean, read between the lines. Things are getting close to going down. Y'all need to be ready to you know, go. When the word comes to go, y'all need to be ready to go. These are real things. Meanwhile, people making decisions for the U.S. are out here talking about China must maintain the status quo with Taiwan while we build military bases and ship weapons to Taiwan, which is the exact opposite of what the status quo was, say, 10 years ago. And they act like this word magic is somehow going to translate into reality. You know? It didn't. I don't know, man. It's just crazy. Saw a story where morale in the British military is like at an all-time low. You know? Then you read a story to where, you know, they're complaining because they got too many white guys applying for the, you know, becoming pilots for the Royal Air Force. If they're doing all this weird social justice stuff on the one hand, like they did, that's where you wind up with this, the weird domestic policy that they're pushing on everybody else. They're not even keeping it walled off from the military. There's overlap there. You got every sign on the horizon of a major war breaking out. And all that implies, And it implies a lot. And yet, you have this overlap. We don't want all these white guys in the military. We need more, you know, LGBT and diversity. That's going to be our strength. You would think they would, if there were competent people making these decisions, even if they were choosing to push this gibberish on the public, they would keep a wall up there and keep the military as competent as they could. But they ain't. There's that overlap. There's that overlap there. Anything? How do they think that's all going to play out? You know, but they don't have any plan. Like I say, they just go kick up an anthill and stir Serbia and let's see what happens with that. But what? There's no plan. They're just going to, well, we're losing in Ukraine, so let's do this and see what happens. Let's see what happens. That's not a plan. If you try to work something out and you are down to, well, I'll throw this random thing here at the problem and see what happens. That ain't a plan, because you obviously haven't figured out the problem. And because everything in the West is based on lies, they're not even going to come close to figuring out the problem, because they can't even identify what the problem is. This is so dangerous. Both Russia and China have said that they can't talk to the U.S. anymore, because the U.S. has demonstrated time and time and time again that any agreement you make with them, they'll turn around literally the next day and say the opposite. They've literally done that. And they're like, we can't talk to you anymore. Now, how are you going to work out a deal? I mean, the way you avoid a military conflict, which is not going to be good for anybody, as I said recently, I'm against all wars, because it's always the regular people that suffer for them. The regular people that don't have a say in any of this nonsense, they're the ones that suffer. The ones calling the shot, they living in their bunkers and they still doing good. If everybody else is starving, the guy running the country, he's going to have nice food on his table. That's the way it's always been. But when you have a situation to where it's going to be, you've made it to where it's diplomatically impossible to solve any of these things, because one party can't even be talked to. I mean, think about that. They're saying and they're correct. The U.S. has demonstrated time and time again that they'll violate any agreement, like, before the ink is dry on the paper. Well, then how are you going to work it out in non-military means? You know what I'm saying? I mean, you've pretty much closed that door, because we can't talk to you, because you won't stick with anything you say. It pretty much makes war inevitable. And again, it's always the regular people that suffer. It's always regular people that suffer. You know, people don't. Americans, and we got to get into the Christian specifics. I need to wrap up, but I'm just going to say Americans are spoiled to this idea that wars are something they watch on TV that happens somewhere else. You know, when bombs start dropping on the U.S., and they don't got to be nuclear bomb. People always like, it has to be a nuclear weapon, and it don't. They got such powerful conventional weapons, they could not cross the nuclear line. Those hypersonic missiles, they can drop regular bombs too. So they could just, they don't have to nuke a city. They can just, blow up, say, 5 square miles of some military production facility. And yeah, there's going to be civilian casualties there. Americans are spoiled to this idea that war or something happens somewhere else, and they watch it like a TV show. They don't understand the gravity of the situation, what that would mean. But I don't know. It looks like they may wind up understanding sooner than anybody might expect. We got to wrap up. We're going to get into the Christian specific segment. Like I said, stick around for that. If you're new around here, I think you might get something out. Hopefully you'll get something out of it. But it is our Christian specific segment, the highlight of the show. So without further ado, as I say every week, y'all know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. You know, I say almost weekly, you know, we talk here and have these discussions. And I bring up the shame that, like, the Old Testament has been, by and large, abandoned as far as the way it's taught or preached, if at all, in the MCC, in the churches today. And it really is a shame. You can't understand the new with the old. And I've heard that all my life, and I'll admit that there are times in my life I didn't really understand what that meant. It's just like a saying. You can't understand the New Testament without the Old Testament. But the more you study both side by side, the more this becomes clear. And it goes beyond simply you can't understand reading what you read in the New Testament versus if you don't understand what you're reading in the Old Testament, is that kind of comes down to a simplistic thing. The reality is that you can't understand the new covenant if you don't understand the old covenant. And sadly, I'd be willing to wager that most Christian believers, or at least I say most, but a lot of, a sizable amount of Christian believers don't understand hardly anything about the old covenant. I've heard people, I'm sure y'all have as well, maybe some of y'all also don't understand it. I hear people talk about the old covenant in the Old Testament and God's promises to Israel, and there just seems to be this complete lack of understanding. Any covenant, a covenant is an agreement, contract, something that bounds two parties. Marriage, in a biblical sense, not in the modern sense, in a biblical sense, is a covenant, an agreement between a man and a woman. A man agrees to fulfill X certain roles. The woman agrees to fulfill X certain roles. And yet, if one party violates the covenant, then the covenant winds up being null and void. The covenant is dissolved. These examples are given to us so that we understand our relationship with the Lord. You have a covenant with your wife. However, if your wife goes out and commits adultery with all these dudes in the neighborhood, are you bound because you made the agreement? Well, no, that just sounds silly. Of course not. You're gonna toss her out and move on. You see, the covenant, but yet the covenant is not binding anymore because the other party violated the covenant. And yet I'll hear people time and again, they'll be like, well, God can't lie. God can't lie. And you see, he promised Israel in the Bible. He promised that, and he can't go back on that. Let's look in 1 Kings. Let's look at chapter 9. We're going to do verses 3 through 7, just as a snapshot. Now, there's many times God has spoken of his, you know, this idea of a contract, of a covenant. In the Old Testament, this is just one snapshot, but all of them have the same theme. We're going to do this as a snapshot because people always leave off the second half. They act like the second half doesn't exist. Now, in 1 Kings chapter 9, we're going to start at verse 3. Solomon has dedicated the temple to the Lord, and he's prayed. He's done the supplication before the Lord. And, you know, he's created this ornate temple for God, and he's putting it out there. And the Lord responds to him, and the Lord said unto him, I have heard thy prayer, thy supplication, that thou hast made before me. I have hallowed this house, which thou hast built, to put my name there forever, and mine eyes and mine heart shall be there perpetually. And if thou wilt, you know, now, remember, God can't lie, right? And the Lord says he's heard this, and his heart, mine heart shall be there perpetually. But does anybody believe that the Lord's heart is sitting in some crumbled temple that doesn't exist anymore? So we keep going. And here's where we're getting. If we got conditions here. And if thou wilt walk before me as David thy father walked, in integrity of heart and in uprightness, to do according to all that I have commanded thee, and wilt keep my statutes and my judgments. Then, see, there's conditions here. When people talk about the old covenant with Israel, they act like there were no conditions. Like God didn't lay down any terms. And if there's conditions, well, we'll get to that here in a minute. Then I will do this. This is a very clearly spelled out agreement. Now, I talked about marriage as an illustration in the biblical sense. I specifically said that because modern marriage today does not exist in the biblical sense. People talk about, you know, you got to be married. But the marriage now is conducted by the state. It's not conducted in the biblical sense by the church. The church is an ornament there, and you might have a preacher marry you. But in every sense of the term, it is a contract laid out and performed by the state. It's a very poorly written out contract. There's no agreement here. It's just you're bound to each other legally. That's why you get tore up in divorce court because the contract isn't laid out. You see, the Lord doesn't do that. The Lord lays this out straight. If you do these things, Then will I establish the throne of thy kingdom upon Israel forever, as I promised to David thy father, saying, there shall not fail thee a man upon the throne of Israel. Very cleared out. What makes modern marriage such a bad deal is there's no conditions laid out. You just, tomorrow, y'all can just decide to go do whatever. Only there's nothing that says you get this and she gets that, and it's up to the court to decide. Now we keep going at verse 6, because now we get to the first word in verse 6 is but. Now when it comes to understanding the covenant with Israel, everybody always seems to forget the but part. You'll run into people and they'll be like, no, God's covenant with Israel still stands because he said he would and he can't lie. But if your understanding is that simplistic, then he's living in a gold ornated temple that doesn't exist anymore. Everybody leaves out the but. Again, why does this matter to us? Because you have to understand the new covenant. You've got to understand the old covenant because they are related. God does operate the same way. There are conditions. He's laid out here. If you will do these things, if you will walk in righteousness like David and try to keep your heart close to me and follow my statutes and my judgments and my laws, then I will do this. Now we get to the flip side of if you violate that. And you have to understand, this is being laid out not just like for Solomon personally, which it is, but it's also for the people. But if ye shall all turn from following me, ye or your children, and will not keep my commandments and my statutes, which I have set before you, but go and serve other gods and worship them. Here's the but. If you go to these very specific things, what's he going to do? Here's the then. Then will I cut off Israel out of the land which I have given them, and this house which I have hallowed for my name will I cast out of my sight, and Israel shall be a proverb and a byword among all the people. If only a modern marriage contract was written out that clearly, huh? I mean, the Lord has laid it out. Look, if you do these specific things, as long as you do these things and follow these things and do follow my commandments and my statutes, and yes, I've heard you and I understand your heart's in the right place right at this moment. But if you do these other things, here's the then. See, if you do what you're supposed to do, this is what I will do on my part. I will give you these things. I will return. I will be here. I'll do these things. I'll honor these things. This is my part. However, if you don't do these things, if you do these other specific things in direct violation, then I'm going to do this. And here's what I'm going to do. You're going to lose your entire country. You're going to lose your nation. You're going to have it stripped away from you. This temple that you've built, this ornate thing, is going to be torn down. It'll be a byword among nations. The entire nation of Israel will just be a byword among the peoples of the world. We'll do these very specific things. And you run into people and they'll be like, God's still bound by that. Well, why is he bound by that? He was very clear in the terms of the contract. If you violate these terms of the contract, then I'm going to do this. This kicks in. The punishment clause kicks in. You can't have an agreement with two people and it's one-sided. It's like making God out to be a fool. But again, when people don't understand the old covenant, it leads to not understanding the new covenant. People understand the old covenant like God somehow is still bound by this, even though the people of Israel and Solomon himself is amazing, because you read this and like just practically the very next chapter, you keep reading, and Solomon is already starting to violate terms of God's agreement. It's just that quick. If you don't understand that it's a two-way street, a covenant is agreement between two parties, which means both parties are going to hold up their end of the bargain for it to be in effect. If you don't understand the old covenant, you don't understand the new covenant, and you get to this place to where, as I harp on to the point that y'all are probably so sick of hearing about it, where the MCC makes like the covenant with Jesus is this one-sided thing, and all you have to do is say you accept him as your Lord and Savior and go about your daily life. Nothing's required of you, and everything's hunky-dory, and you're going to go to heaven, which is just simply not true. I'm sorry. It's just not. It's a hard thing maybe for people to hear, but that's just not true. Just as with the old covenant, there are conditions here. You have to truly carry it out. We had one of these discussions, and it's been some time back. I couldn't tell you what show it is. But we did a discussion, and we were talking about the trial of Jesus before Pilate as viewed in the context of abolishing the old covenant and establishing the new. Like, there was this whole procedure with the people. It's like, okay, you know, because if you are in a legal agreement with somebody, a business agreement, a marriage, whatever, and you have this business agreement with somebody, and the other party's not holding up, like, literally anything that's their part of the agreement, and they're still demanding that you give them, you know, you fulfill your part of the agreement, then what are you going to do? You're going to go to court, and you're going to have a procedure, and you're going to testify in the court. And we talked about how you look at this, and it was an entire procedure. The guilty parties involved here said, yes, let his blood be on our heads and our children's heads. Let a curse basically be upon us and our people. This is an official abolishing of the old covenant, and a new one is established. And again, it's important to understand, because if you don't understand the context of the old covenant, you're not going to understand the context of the new covenant. God is not different. I've heard people my whole life say God was meaner in the Old Testament. Yeah. The Old Testament, that was the mean God days. You see, God was nice in the New Testament. But that's not the case. It's the same God. It's if your view is God was mean in the Old Testament, but got nicer in the New Testament, then you don't understand either one. Likewise, if you don't understand the Old Covenant, that it had conditions upon it, God does not change. Then you have to look at the New Covenant. And if your understanding of the New Covenant is nothing is required on your part, then you don't understand it. If you understand the Old Covenant, and you understand that God is the same, then you look at this New Covenant and you say, okay, well, what are the conditions? And they're very clearly laid out. God has provided for us a way to fulfill our purpose in this world through Jesus Christ. We talk about this week in and week out. Your sins are forgiven by faith, and that faith is demonstrated by how you live, how you strive to be closer to him. Your sins are forgiven so that you can continue to go through this process, not so that you can say some words and then just keep on chasing after all the other BS that the world chases after. And that's basically what's preached in the MCC today. And again, I'm sorry that I go on, I guess, about these topics over and over again, but you have to understand every church in America, virtually every church, I'm probably painting with a broad brush here. But I would venture to say the vast majority of the churches are teaching something completely different every single day across the country. Like, you just say the words and you're good to go. You understand the old covenant. This little snippet, at every instant, God lays out a condition. When you read the Old Testament, every time God talks to Israel, talks about establishing Israel and having a covenant with them, there is always the but. But y'all have to do this. And if you don't do that, this is what's going to happen. I say this, and I think this is very clear. I don't even think I'm coming up with something controversial. I think if you just read the text, it's pretty easy to understand. It's pretty in your face. Yet I can guarantee there's people sitting there shaking their heads. I'm quite likely to get mail or email coming at me like, you just don't understand. You just don't understand. God is not a fool. If you looked at somebody, then we used marriage as an illustration. Let's go back to that for a minute. If you knew a man and he was married, and you see, you know, he's married to a woman, and they made this agreement, this marriage agreement, and yet she was going around town having sex with all these other dudes, and everybody knows it, and the guy knows it, the husband knows it, and you're like, dude, you know, she, you know, she'd been passed around by everybody in town. What's up with that, you know? And he's like, well, I made an agreement with her, and I'm going to honor our marriage. You know, I'm holding the marriage together. You know, I'm going to honor the marriage. You'd go back home shaking your head, wouldn't you? You'd say, that man's a fool. His wife a skank. She a hoe, to use modern language. She done been passed around. Passed around by everybody in town. She's still, but she laughing in his face. She cheating around with everybody, and he talking about, I'm going to honor the marriage. Everybody's going to laugh and snicker at that guy because he's an idiot, aren't you? Because she's violated her terms of the agreement. And yet, people will make God out to be that guy. People act like God is supposed to be that idiot that just holds up his end of the bargain, even though the other party has violated literally every single term of the bargain, of the agreement. We have these discussions. I always try to stay focused on Christ because that's our covenant. That's our agreement. And we understand that. And when we understand the old covenant, we're going to better understand the new one. But that's the one we're under. That's the one we've got. You know, Paul says it in his letters, and who far be it from me to act, you know, to go stray something different. You know, we talk about Christ crucified. We preach Christ crucified here. We discuss Christ crucified here. That is our focus and what that means for us. We want to get off on other things. You know, it's, I guess I feel like I don't fit into categories that people create, you know. I mean, Sven would say, for lack of a better term, he would say, you know, I have an evangelical podcast. And I'd be like, no, not really. Don't associate me with what people think of as evangelicals, because that sure ain't me. I think we just don't fit into a box here. We just pursue truth. And this is kind of where, like, people, you know, like, for instance, when you get into, We're the ancient Israelites, white people. This is where I kind of part way. I'm fixing to get some hate here, but hear me out on this. Hear me out. I'm going to try to lay this out to where you understand what I'm saying, because this is where I kind of part ways with hardcore Christian identity. And like I say, hear me out. Don't get triggered and just pound the table and start firing off an angry email at me. When you get into, you know, I have no problem with that as a historical understanding. I do think it's important to understand the realities of history. And for instance, they're trying to turn all historical white people into black people and act like that's real. And obviously it's not. You look at ancient Egypt and the pharaohs had red hair. You know what I mean? And yet they try to act like they were brown and black people. You know, and that's just not historically accurate. Were the ancient Israelites white people? Well, yes, obviously they were. Every description of them, they obviously, who else were they? I mean, what else were they? They obviously weren't modern Israelis. They weren't modern day Jews. I mean, because like they were the they're the exact opposite, you know, as the characteristics of modern day Jews. So obviously they weren't those people. The closest thing you could correlate and relate them to would be white people. I mean, they obviously were white people, but I don't think they're white people is the closest, what do I want to say, the closest relationship to whoever's around today. Read, and this is where it's important to read the Old Testament. I keep saying that. When you read about these people, Sven used a really great analogy in one of his patriotic history podcasts, and talking about one of the ancient civilizations. And he said that, you know, you had the original man, Adam, and then, you know, you made a copy from that. And then the next generation made a copy of that copy. And he made the illustration of using a copy on a copy machine. You copy a paper. But if you don't keep using the original, you use the next copy to make the next copy, it will degrade, you know, and pretty soon you can't even read the text because you just lose a little bit in every copy. And that has stuck with me. It was so informative because that's exactly what you have. Those people, the ancient Israelites, were so much closer to the genetic original, which was Adam, as to be almost indistinguishable from what you see today. These guys were monsters. And when I say monsters, I don't mean like, you know, evil monsters, Hollywood monsters. I just mean like physical strength monsters. You read the stories of the mighty men, you know, that David commanded, and some of these warriors. You know, one guy killed, like, I don't know, 300 guys in battle all day. I don't care how physically fit you are, how much cardio you do. You're not going to swing a heavy sword, shield, or spear all day killing 300 dudes and, like, you're still on your feet. You know, one of the mighty men could throw a spear and impale three dudes on it. And think about what's entitled, because people read that and they just, well, they probably embellish it. They weren't embellishing. This is giving you information. They were going to embellish. They would have papered over. They would have painted over and colored up the failings of the leadership at the time. You know, when David sinned, when Solomon sins and falls away from the Lord, they would have painted that up, made it look better. They're not embellishing. Those guys were literally that strong. There literally were giants around in those days that those men fought against. So yes, they were white people. As far as, you know, the closest thing to what we have today, but they were so much genetically superior to what we are today. This to be just unbelievable. If you took somebody who goes to the gym, like this big muscled up guy, and you could teleport him back then, it would look like a total wimp to those guys. It'd be like, yeah, we'll take you out to battle and see how long you last. Them guys are out there slinging a sword and a spear, fighting all day long. The regular guy is going to be like falling over after an hour of that and can't go on. And yes, I mean, I in a historical context, I'm right in line with all of that. You know, because I have people, they're like, are you Christian identity? You know, you got to go in the box. I'm truth pursuing. I don't know. It doesn't roll off the tongue very good. We need a new term. I don't know. Historically speaking, obviously, the closest relation to whoever's around today, yes, it would be white people, obviously. Where I start parting ways is long enough, you talk to somebody, not everybody, I'm not saying everybody does this, but you wind up talking to people that really get into that, I mean, really get into it, beyond more than, like, you know, studying history and understanding where we come from as a people and things such as that. And sooner or later, you get down to this old covenant applies to me, and it starts watering down the new covenant. And that's where we part ways on this. I'm sticking with Christ crucified. If you're going to bring the old thing, yes, but that's for me. See, the old covenant's for me. Like you're going to get a get out of hell free card without Jesus Christ. And that's not the case. Okay. Anything that's going to lead people away from Christ crucified. Oh, what? In the Bible, in the early church, he warns again and again and again, not get caught back up under the law, under the old rules, like you're going to do rule following in this old covenant. We're under a new covenant, a new agreement, and that's what we stick with. Again, no problem as far as the historical understanding, but I more than once wound up, you know, talking with people, and they eventually get down to, yes, but see, This old covenant is for me. It's meant for me. Like, you know, Jesus is secondary. You know, yeah, I know. I believe in Jesus and everything, but, you know, I mean, I got this old covenant in my favor too. Like, Jesus is number two. You see, number one, I got this covenant for me, for ancient Israel. Even though we just read, but if you do these other things, this is what's going to happen. Like, just the first part applies. And then over here on line two, like as a subtext, you know, there's also Jesus. And again, I'm not saying everybody, you know, thinks that way. I'm not painting people with that kind of brush. I'm just saying that's when it gets into that, and I have run into people that do get into that, then we part ways. I stick with Christ crucified. That's what I'm taught. That's what's in the Bible. And that's what, when understanding the old covenant, I understand the new covenant and how the two are interrelated. I really didn't even want to get off into that, because I know I'm going to hear about it. I mean, you don't understand. Just saying. Again, I'm with y'all. But if you're going to get into, I'm somehow going to heaven because of this old agreement, and Jesus is now in the back seat. We're parting ways. Jesus ain't going in the back seat. I'm sorry. He's not. God did what he did. He's made these agreements. And he's very, they're very clearly spelled out. They're really not hard to understand. I'm not going to start trying to pretend like they are, they're something that they're not. Anyway, I could get off into other things. I'm sitting there just now. I got all kinds of things going in my, I can make lots of people mad. We ain't got time to get off into other things. We're not. Stick with Christ crucified. It's great. It's fine to understand the history, and you should understand. But don't start trying to put Jesus in the back seat like he's a backup plan. You know, if something goes wrong, well, I got Jesus back there. So it's all good. It's like the ejection seat. I can fly this plane myself just fine. But if for some reason something goes haywire, in case of emergency, pull Jesus. That ain't how it works. And it's not hard to understand. The old covenant is not in contradiction to the new. Likewise, the new isn't in contradiction to the old. It's the same God doing the same things, following the same patterns. He's very clear about these things. And it's not that hard to understand. I hope y'all got that. I'll know. I'll be able to judge by how much hate mail I get. You don't understand. Look, just keep Jesus as focused as you like. You got to stay centered. I just say centered. We're going to part ways. If you're putting Jesus in the back seat, I can't go with that. I'm sorry. I'm just not. I'm just not doing it. Sorry. We're going to wrap up on that note. Hope you got something out of it. Understanding. You got very clear. I really dislike the way that preachers and stuff over the years, I guess, have tried to turn it into this complicated thing, you know, to understanding God. It's not that complicated. God does things that make absolute sense. You know, I mean, these things are very clearly spelled out. It's not that hard. I think sometimes people have tried to make it confusing to make their own roles, you know, more important. And we discuss these things here and everything. And really, honestly, I feel like we're just talking about obvious things. I when I have these discussions, I always picture y'all sitting there, you know, like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I understand. Mm. I mean, it's good to discuss it, but I don't think we're discussing anything that's like really far out there and hard to understand. I think God has spelled things out really clearly, and I think they're pretty easy to understand. And I think that's the way it's meant to be understood. You know, he wants us to understand these things. He doesn't want us wandering around being confused, dazed, without a clue of what's happening. That's for sure not his intention. We're going to go ahead and wrap up on that note. Thank you for joining us. I hope you got something out of it this week. That's always the goal here. That's why we're here. That's why we show up at this show every week, week in, week out. Do plan to be back. I'll be back Friday for the Friday installment of the Daily Nationalist. So I hope you'll join me for that. And as always, I hope you'll come back and join me next week here for the Parish of the Patriots.